Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
What's happening, y'all? Welcome back to Round Ball Stew. It's been a couple weeks, but I'm Dan Titus, joined as always with Rafael Johnson, here to talk hoops. We are at the NBA Finals, first of the month, June 1st. We got the Miami Heat taking on the Denver Nuggets in the NBA Finals. It should be a good one. I'm anticipating it. I know you are too, Raf. But what we're going to do today is pretty much give a quick preview of our thoughts on the NBA Finals. What's next for the Celtics and the Lakers as they both got bounced respectively from their conference finals? So what are they going to do in the offseason? We'll also give an update. Tons of coaching changes around the league, so we'll get our thoughts on what that might mean from a fantasy impact, and then also give an early look into the top picks of the upcoming 2023 NBA draft. But first things first, Raf, how have you been enjoying this playoff run?
It's been fun. As usual, some of the discourse surrounding the basketball you kind of do without, but I've enjoyed watching both Denver and Miami play at this point, and I think we're in for a good series. Obviously, we'll go a bit further in depth here, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I agree, man, and I think the parity is what I enjoy most about the NBA. Yeah. Like the Nuggets, they obviously dominated for most of the season, regular season, postseason, but the Heat on the Eastern Conference side, man, just taking out juggernauts and with unheralded guys, and I'm not going to get into the whole, well, we'll get into it now. Might as well talk about it. Let's start things off, man. Let's talk about the Heat side of things. Obviously, they were underdogs for most of the playoffs. They've knocked off the Bucks, your Knicks, and also the Celtics, man. And I think it just goes to show that Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the NBA. He has been for a long time. But give me your thoughts on what you've seen out of the Miami Heat and how they've made this epic run, defying all the odds and seemingly making their seventh NBA Finals appearance.
Yeah, I think two things stick out to me. First and foremost, Jimmy Butler. You know, he had a couple quiet games in the series against the Celtics, but overall, he's just been him. Like,
Butler.
He's been the leader for that team in between the lines. Eric Spoelstra, on the sidelines. And the other thing that stands out to me, a lot of times we talk so much about role definition. I think the Heat are also a good example of role acceptance. Like, you've had guys that go from out of the rotation to playing, like a Duncan Robinson. On the flip side, Kevin Love went from starting to being a DNP CD the last two games of the series. No complaining. They all understand what the major goal is. I'm receiving a bunch of emails right now. I'm sorry. But, I think – Those have been big reasons why the Heat are in the position that they're in. They're decided underdogs from a betting standpoint, but I wouldn't put it past them to win four more games.
Yeah, they are. They're substantial underdogs, plus 400 right now as it stands. And so pretty much they're giving the Nuggets an 80% probability to win this series. Far better than ESPN's analytics that had the Celtics 97% chance to win over the Miami Heat. That did not look good. Their analytics department certainly needs to shake up some things. But yeah, I agree with everything you said. And the role identification and acceptance, I think, has been huge for the Miami Heat throughout the playoffs, especially Caleb Martin. Now, this man's on an all-time heater right now, has like the highest E field goal percentage in NBA playoff history with at least 150 shot attempts. Just shooting unconscious from three-point land, which I think has really been the difference for the Miami Heat in this postseason, that they've just been knocking them down at a 39% clip, which is they weren't doing that in the regular season. So the adjustments that Spo's making, I think it's all the right things, kind of the culmination of everything coming together at the right time. Momentum matters, and this Miami Heat team certainly has the energy right behind Jimmy Butler, their leading guy. And everyone's stepping up. Gabe Vincent, two-way player, balling out. Caleb Martin, we already talked about. Duncan Robinson, as you mentioned, Max Strus is playing above above his head. So Yeah, I think it's just been great to see eighth seed going into against the top seed. So let's talk about the Nuggets a little bit. Are you surprised? Are you what are you expecting from them? You know, they do have a 9-day layoff since closing out and sweeping the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. What are your expectations for them going into the finals?
I think they're going to win the championship. I'm not surprised at all. If anything, I'm surprised by the way they've been discussed in more prominent circles.
Disrespected. Like, yeah, disrespected.
It's funny, like the same people who would who disregarded them throughout the playoffs are now upset that Michael Malone would continue to point it out. Like, really? You know, but yeah, I think, on
both sides too, right?
Yeah,
like exactly. Both of them have been getting disrespected in the media. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But I think if anything, we think back to that regular season win over Memphis where they blew them out. That was a turning point for both franchises. You know, the next night you had Ja Morant in the Gentlemen's Club getting in his trouble. And on the other side, I think Denver, they wrapped up the one seed essentially. I think they got a little bored. You know, I think it was more about being healthy coming into the playoffs. They had the one seed locked up. And if anything, losing home court against either Milwaukee or Boston obviously doesn't matter now because they're playing Miami. So everything worked out. You got Jokic doing his usual thing in the middle. I think Michael Porter Jr.'s role acceptance has been huge for them. You know, being more willing to defend, even sit out closing out games in favor of Bruce Brown if the situation calls for it. So I think they're clicking on all cylinders right now. I think they win this series in six.
Yeah, I too think they're going to win in six. I wouldn't be surprised they won in five. Much as I think that the Heat have done a great job of playing above expectation, this Nuggets team is different. They're number one in offensive rating in the playoffs, 8 in defensive rating, number 2, I think, number 1 in net rating. Their ability to switch everything with their size, and I think that that's going to be the difference that the Boston Celtics just neglected to take advantage of. They were punishing the Miami Heat on 2-point field goals, but then they just wound up settling for this 3-pointer every time they got into a zone. And that's not the way you shoot. I mean, you can sometimes shoot out of a zone, but you can also shoot your way out of a zone and then fall victim to it, which like they did in game 7. So the Denver Nuggets are very good, the best in the league against zone defense. So Eric Spoelstra is going to have to make some different adjustments. I'm curious to see if the Heat can neutralize Jokic. No one's been able to figure it out yet. The Lakers probably came the closest by doing this man spy technique with Anthony Davis kind of hovering in the paint. But then that leaves the dunker spot open, which Aaron Gordon actually did a great job in the Lakers series exploiting, knocking down threes, getting those easy buckets at the rim. I just think that there's too much talent and depth on the Nuggets for the Heat to sustain this. But I think it's going to be a good series nonetheless. I hope that the Heat can crawl out a couple more games. But yeah, this is going to be a really good matchup, and I'm excited. KCP has been playing outstanding defense, so I'm curious to see how he's going to be doing, locking up Jimmy Butler more than likely. Bruce Brown's been great off the bench. Him and Christian Braun and Jeff Green providing really valuable minutes defensively for this Denver Nuggets team. It's going to be a great strategy session, so I'm really excited for this NBA Finals. So we both got our predictions in. We both have Nuggets in six. I wouldn't be surprised if it's in five. One person that I want to talk about, though, regarding this series is Jamal Murray. And just curious to your thoughts of whether you're moving him up your rankings going into next season after what he's done. And clearly this guy is of the same mold of Jimmy Butler where, you know, all right, we got regular season Jamal. That was cool. You know, top 60 player. Playoff Jamal Murray is a different animal. This guy's averaging 28 points, 6 boards, and 5 dimes. Like, that's pretty tough. And like Bob Meyer says, you know, the regular season, the playoffs are completely different animals. When people show up in the playoffs, that really means something. So what does that mean for you, for Jamal Murray going into next season?
I think he's easily within top 50 in my ratings. And that may be a bit conservative. You know, he's had the full season to play through, you know, play off the rust, so to speak, after missing all that time with the ACL tear. And as you mentioned, he's been on fire in the playoffs. You know, that's been a big reason why the attempts to neutralize Jokic haven't been successful, because of how well Jamal Murray has played, whether it's throughout the course of a full game or where he just goes on a heater within the course of a single quarter. So I think he's easily a top 50 guy next season. And because, if anything, I think he's going to be able to put even more on his plate offensively. Just because, like I said, the amount of time he was working his way back from missing, that's a big deal for him.
Yeah, that's definitely a big deal. Completely agree with that. Yeah, you know, this, I feel like Jamal Murray, the assist is the only thing. Like, I would love if you could rely on him to get like 7 assists. I think the rebounding will always be fine. Will he average 25 a game next year? I don't know. That might be a little rich, but I mean, I think 24 is certainly in the cards. It's the efficiency that I wonder, can he keep that up? You know, the 3-pointers, he's shooting over, he's making over 3.5 3-pointers a game. He does that throughout the course of the season. Like, it's over. So yeah, I think top 40, I think I could go that high. Potentially top 30. We'll see. Maybe I can move him into the third round. But either way, I think his stock is up from the playoffs. I think what we've seen, the last time we saw him go off in the bubble before his ACL injury, you know, I think he's right back to that, if not better. Yeah. So, as you said, that two-way punch of him and Jokic, you stop one, what do you do about the other? And then you got all the role players. Denver is just so deep, man. It's great to watch and great to see. So let's switch to the losers of the Western Conference Finals here. let's start with the Lakers. LeBron, I'm sure everyone probably watched the post-game interview, gave a little doubt about whether he was going to be coming back or not. I think he's going to be coming back. It's LeBron James. He's not done with basketball yet. Let's see if he'll actually be able to play with his son, Bronny, like he's talked about in years past. But I want to talk about their roster construction and what you think they're going to do in the offseason here. They do have a decision to make. I think the most prominent decision that they're going to have to decide on is D'Angelo Russell, a guy that got played off the court in the Denver Nuggets series. Played well up until that point, but I think that it really showed his lapses in terms of defensive capabilities and switching. And also just the decision-making. His shot profile wasn't the best. And then also, you know, as he claims himself, he's not a true point guard, right? He's a ball player. He's a hooper. So do you think that they're going to end up re-signing him, or will they pivot to maybe try to make some magic work via trade? Kyrie was sitting courtside for game 4. Certainly need some additional scoring help there. It looked like LeBron was just pleading for anyone to get a bucket that wasn't him in game four of the Western Conference Finals. So what do you think they're going to do between D'Lo and any other option at guard? And also, got to mention, Austin Reeves is going to be up for a new contract. I think they re-sign him. Rui Hachimura, I think they'll also re-sign him, because I think he gave them really good minutes in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Austin Reeves, I think he's secure in coming back. A restricted free agent. I think, if anything, if you're the Lakers, you try to strike a deal before he hits the open market so that someone doesn't come in with like a poison pill type deal or something like that, because they really need him back. His ability to make plays as a secondary playmaker, he plays well alongside LeBron and Anthony Davis. Rui Hachimura, as you mentioned, he played well throughout the postseason. So I think he's someone else that they should probably be able to bring back as a restricted free agent. The Russell situation is interesting to me. I don't think he's someone that where we're going to hear in the opening hours of free agency that the Lakers have re-signed him. I think they're really going to look at other options, maybe Kyrie. But if you're looking to spend that type of money, I think Russell made about $32 million this past season. They're going to want more from that position than what he was able to give them, even when he was playing well. So I think, if anything, they may keep the lines of communication open just to make sure they're not completely like out of pocket, so to speak. But I don't think they're going to try to re-sign him for that type of money. I think Dennis Schroeder is another interesting case too. You know, I think he outplayed the contract that he was given in Los Angeles. Obviously, you know, we know the story about the prior contract offer that he turned down and didn't work out so well for him. But I think he's back to the point where he command decent money on the open market. So we'll see if that's going to preclude him from returning to the Lakers or not. But I think Reeves is the priority in terms of their backcourt players right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think Dennis Schroeder is going to end up leaving. I think he earned himself a little bit more money, especially on that playoff run. Being a starter, committing on the defensive end, I think he did a great job doing his best job that he could to kind of slow down those Nuggets guards. But yeah, I think Austin Reaves definitely makes sense to re-sign him. I'm still trying to wonder if he's a system guy or whether he's really that nice, but whatever the case may be, I think it would be in the Lakers' best interest to re him up. Rui Hachimura, same thing. D'Lo, I don't know. I feel like they need to move on. If I'm Pelinka, I'm trying to find other options there. So maybe that's via trade. We're going to talk about some draft implications later on, but I think that there could be the Lakers, the way that Pelinka changed around that roster mid-season, I think gave them more flexibility to move some assets around if they do want to acquire another player that might be a better fit for their current build. So we'll see how that kind of shakes out. On the Celtics side of things, they got a money problem that is going to approach very quickly, because now that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown both earned all NBA honors, they are both eligible for the Supermax, which is going to come at a hefty bill of $613 million over the next couple of seasons. Wow. Number one. I almost think that the Boston Celtics have a Sixers situation here. They might have to blow something up. They got to trade a guy. I mean, maybe they could. Okay. Without going too crazy, they can make this run out for one more year. Problem is, you're not going to get that much for Jaylen Brown if he decides to walk in free agency. So I kind of feel like now is the right time to make a move. Maybe you trade Robert Williams. The guy is defensive player of the year upside, but he can't stay healthy. But maybe he can help another team. You can get some assets there. Malcolm Brogdon, he has a partially torn ligament in his elbow. Will he get surgery? I don't know. Probably not going to keep him out for very long, but still. You know, that is the sixth man of the year. And I don't know. I just can't help but think that this Boston Celtics team has just underperformed in terms of expectation. Now, Mazzulla, he inherited a really good team, took them to the Eastern Conference Finals yet again, fifth time in 7 years. So I think he has definitely a more leash, and he's going to get his own coaching staff. Udoka plucked a couple of the Celtics assistants to join him in Houston. But I don't know. I just can't help but feel like this team just continues to underperform in the brightest lights. And Jason Tatum got hurt, but hey, we've seen Jimmy Butler play through practically everything. It comes to a point where maybe we're just making excuses for a Boston team that really just can't get over this hump. But what are your thoughts on what Boston should do in the offseason?
I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt on this season as a whole. I know we've seen them have like ups and downs throughout the course of seasons in the past, but no one bargained for your initial head coach to be suspended for the year just before the start of training camp.
Yeah.
So I think you bring that into consideration. The fact that Mazzulla was a back row assistant, you know, before that all happened. So to go from there to being the interim head coach and doing a good enough job to get that tag removed. Yeah, they're certainly growing pains. No young head coach is going to have everything figured out. So you understand that. You know, they also lost a valued assistant in Damon Stoudemire during the season when he took the Georgia Tech job. So you're losing not just valued voices within the staff, but also voices who have NBA playing experience. And that's a pretty big – that can be a pretty big deal for the players that are out there in terms of the information they receive and how they accept said information. So it was a disappointing finish to their season, but – I think you have to give this one more shot in terms of Jaylen and Jason. Now, the new CBA is going to have a lot to say with that as well in terms of how much you can pay guys, because it's going to be very difficult to go over those tax aprons, you know, moving forward because of those changes. So I think the guys you mentioned are obvious question marks in terms of what they're going to do there. Grant Williams will be a free agent this summer.
He's gone.
He somehow fell completely out of the rotation before they put him back in the Miami series, gave them some good minutes, but
definitely
you have to wonder with what they could potentially have to pay the two Jays, they're going to have enough money left for him. So that's going to be a big question mark. They only have the 35th pick in the draft. I guess financially that may be a good thing because you don't have guaranteed money to pay if you have a first rounder, but I don't know. I think they're too close to blow it up. I know they fell in that 3-0 hole, but I just think they're too close to say, you know what, we're going to scrap this. Let's start over with one of our two stars instead of both of them.
Yeah, I see the argument for running it back. I mean, they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, that's all things considered. Sure, you didn't get a championship, but it's very hard to get a championship. I think it was more about Mazzulla needing to feel comfortable, right? Like he inherited a situation, give him a whole offseason to prepare with the people that he needs to make those adjustments and those coaching decisions that he really didn't make. You know, listening to interviews with that guy is like pulling teeth. Like, it's crazy. And so I think he'll just kind of get a little bit more comfortable in the role and how he needs to command and what he needs to get out of the locker room. I can't, but I don't know if you remember in the offseason when Jaylen Brown was doing these like pool exercises, like military training type. But
I saw someone crack a joke about him not being able to dribble.
Yeah, because he can't go left like Zoolander. It's funny, man. And like I thought about it, and like it's crazy how much his handle really got exposed. And like I saw Caleb Martin was talking to somebody about how it was a part of their game plan to force him to go left. But then going back in a few years, Draymond Green was talking about this. Yo, do what we can to just stop him from going right. So yeah, I think that there's also some player accountability that needs to be had here, and how people need to grow and get better. Jason Tatum, I think he could improve by finishing better with contact. I mean, but we're still talking about all NBA players here, so there's not that much more that they need to do to get better. But yeah, I'm curious to see how they reshape this organization going into next season if they decide to blow things up, switch things up a little bit, knowing that it's going to cost a lot of money to keep those two stars in a Boston Celtic uniform. Yeah, let's go into before we get into the coaching carousel. Make sure to download the Roto World app to receive breaking news all season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoriting players on your roster. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right to your phone. It's available in your app store today.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
First coach that I think is – let's talk about the one that came to the top of mind for me because it happened like literally yesterday. Monty Williams going from the Phoenix Suns to the Detroit Pistons. This one seems to come out of nowhere. Kevin Ollie was being discussed amongst others. And apparently, Yahoo Sports national NBA reporter Vince Goodwill, who's got ties to the Detroit area and media, got first wind of Monty Williams kind of ramping up here. And, you know, he was one of their prime candidates once he became available, signed a pretty lucrative deal here that's going to last upwards of 6 years. He's getting a lot of money. And I think that this was a little bit surprising because I guess organizations didn't know, hey, Monty, you've been through a lot with the disappointments of the Suns thing, even though you turned the whole thing around. Maybe he was going to take a year off. He decided not to. He's taking on a rebuild, which I think is pretty cool, actually. So what are your thoughts from a fantasy perspective of what Monty Williams could potentially do for Detroit? Being that they have such a mix of young players, some veteran guys, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic, for example. What are your expectations there?
I think this is huge for Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey. The way that they can operate with the basketball in their hands, I think they're more than capable of playing off of each other in a starting lineup. So to have a coach who in the past has shown great belief in his play, his on-ball playmakers, where they're talking like Chris Paul, Devin Booker. Those guys were able to kind of go out and do their own thing. Now, obviously, Cunningham and Ivy will be held accountable. They won't be able to be reckless with the basketball, but I think both of them could receive, be on the receiving end, a nice fantasy boost in terms of value. Killian Hayes, I'm still not there with him, but I know we saw Monty work his magic with campaign, so maybe he can do something there too. So the bigs also, they have a lot of young bigs, but none are like a DeAndre Ayton where they have to, or they demand the basketball, and if they don't get it, kind of shut down a bit. So I think maybe we'll see some good like shot block numbers from say like a Jalen Duren, or you know, even an Isaiah Stewart. I think he's more of a rebounder guy at this point in his career. So I think this is a good move for Detroit. Giving him that type of financial security kind of shows that they're all in with him for the time being in terms of rebuild, and they understand how difficult of a process this is going to be.
Yeah, to me, it always felt like Dwayne Casey was a bridge to something
caretaker,
greater.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that my biggest takeaway was, as you mentioned, the DeAndre Ayton situation, because they don't have a guy that's demanding the ball in the post and to run the offense through him, I think that actually is going to be a good thing for Cade Cunningham to kind of showcase what he can do, as well as Jaden Ivey, as you mentioned. That's just one less headache, and I'm kind of curious as to how Monty Williams can form his organization, build it from the ground up, essentially, and create that culture that he had that got the Phoenix Suns to where they are now without the disruptions of someone like Ayton and Jay Crowder kind of blowing up the locker room. So, yeah, I'm excited for what it could do for Detroit. I'm not going to overrank or prioritize guys, but I do think Cade Cunningham certainly should show out here. I could see him taking on a mentorship role, or Monty Williams taking over a mentorship role with the type of talent that he has, kind of mold him the way that he shifted Booker's Booker's situation as well. Would be curious to see if they actually move maybe some assets for some veterans just to kind of have another voice in the locker room. But Bojan Bogdanović hasn't really done that much in terms of his career, but he's an old guy. So, I mean, I think that they could probably use another heady guy, veteran, to kind of help lead that locker room. But I think it's a good thing for Detroit. Like, that was a steal for them. They're paying him a lot of money, but I think it's worth it. Nick Nurse going to Philly. Interesting interdivisional movement there. No word on where Doc's going, but there's been rumors to the Suns, a couple other teams. What do you think that this means for Nick Nurse in the? I'll be honest, man, I'm Sixers guy. I'm scared as hell for Joel Embiid here. Nick Nurse and those rotations, man. He does not run deep. He plays his guys heavy minutes. He's Tibbs 2.0. I mean, we could either see Embiid put up monstrous numbers or get hurt literally the seventh game of the season for the workload that he's about to get. But I think that this is actually a bigger play for the Sixers to make a move to replace eventually James Harden, whether that be Fred VanVleet and or Pascal Siakam. I don't know. I think one of those guys is going to end up in a Sixers uniform. But what are your thoughts on Nick Nurse going to Philly?
I think he'll be working with a deeper bench in Philly than what he had in Toronto. So I don't think he's going to be out there trying to play Embiid 43 minutes per game. I don't think that's going to happen. I know we like to joke about it, but I don't think that's going to happen. If anything, especially if James Harden leaves in free agency, Tyrese Maxey is someone I'm really high on fantasy-wise. He took a hit. I think the foot injury that he suffered early in the season was part of that. Reason why, but he's someone that I'm really looking forward to grabbing fantasy, because one thing about Nick Nurse's teams in Toronto is that he had multiple on-ball playmakers. It wasn't just the point guard. So I think Maxey is someone who could really take off in that system from a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah, if they do decide to trade for, one of their guards, Fred VanVleet, Fred VanVleet Maxey backcourt scares me defensively, but
VanVleet is a free agent, so they wouldn't have to do that. So
Let's I'm curious to see what Nick Nurse has planned, but I think it's a good move for the Sixers. You're getting a guy that has been to the NBA Finals, perennial playoff contending team for the most part outside of this season that, they fell victim to injury, some movement as well. But yeah, I think this is a good move for the Sixers. We'll see what comes out of it. But I think Nick Nurse was pretty much just maxed out with the Toronto Raptors, took them as far as they could go. Need a change of scenery like many other coaches. Kind of a curveball. Milwaukee decided to hire Adrian Griffin, a first-year head coach. Been around the league for forever. As I was reading up on him, you know, obviously he was a player for a substantial amount of time. Went to the NBA Finals with the Dallas Mavericks, was a starter. They eventually lost that series. But he's also had international experience. He's been a bench player, a role player, a starter. So I think the angle here for selecting him was like he can relate. And this is kind of goes back to what you were saying about Joe Mazzulla. I think this is the era where the players want to connect with the coach and, and have some influence and perspective of what it's like to be in different different positions within your career. And I think it could be a good move for Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee is going to have some interesting situations coming up. Chris Middleton, what do you do with him? Giannis is going to become a free agent in time. Does he demand a trade? I don't know. Drew Holiday is given a 3-year timeline on his retirement. I don't know if that's real or not, but this Milwaukee team is going to be potentially in some transition. So it's interesting that they decided to take a leap of faith with a guy like Adrian Griffin, who, you know, has been an assistant for quite some time and seemed to have proved enough to earn the trust of the Milwaukee brass. But what are your thoughts on his decision to join the Milwaukee Bucks?
Well, it was reported that Giannis did have some input on the search, and he's believed to be in favor of Adrian Griffin being the next head coach. So, you know, he's got 2 years left on his contract before a player option. When you're a smaller, you know, a franchise in a smaller market and you have a superstar like Giannis, it's only right that you take some of their input on a head coaching search, you know? So I think Giannis is going to continue to be what he's been. You just hope the free throw percentage improves. Maybe Adrian Griffin can work some magic there. I'm not sure. But, you know, Chris Middleton has a player option for next season. I wouldn't be shocked if he tried to hit the open market, you know, get that last major payday. If he can get it in Milwaukee or elsewhere. I think Brooke Lopez is also a free agent. So, you know, like you mentioned, there can be some interesting times in Milwaukee, but I think as long as they've got Giannis and he's happy, you've got Drew Holiday for another guaranteed year before his player option, they're still going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, they're going to be a top team in the Eastern Conference for sure. As long as you have one of the best players on the planet in Giannis. And, yeah, hopefully he can convince him to, I don't know, switch up his free throw routine or something. Maybe he should stop focusing on that 10 seconds or 13 seconds, whatever it takes for him to shoot a damn free throw. But, yeah, he certainly needs to improve that in terms of a fantasy perspective. Points leagues, Giannis is still a beast. But, head-to-head, that free throw percentage really hurt his value this year. You know, he was in the hundreds, unfortunately, for a lot of the season. Yeah, I think it's a good hire, but I don't really know what to expect at this point. The first year head coaches don't always do great. I think that they're buying into the long-term outlook here. So probably going to be some growing pains initially, but I mean, Willie Green was kind of a similar guy that was in NBA circles, played multiple different roles throughout organizations as a former player, and he earned the trust of the locker room. So he's doing his thing in New Orleans, and I wouldn't be surprised if Adrian Griffin has success being that. I don't know. He's got great players already on his roster, so that certainly helps your situation. It's like you're going through a complete rebuild like this team, the Houston Rockets. Ime Udoka, we talked about him. I think the last time we talked, he had just been named their head coach, had their media day, and said some good things from a fantasy perspective that I would think look good for the guards. He did mention bringing in some veterans. Don't know what that means for Alperen Şengün, but it should mean – some good things. I doubt that he's going to send him to the bench or anything drastic like that. But what do you think that Udoka will bring for the Houston Rockets here? They do have the number 4 pick in the draft. I think they have tons of assets if they want to play around and make some moves. Will they welcome back James Harden? I know Rockets Twitter is, you know, a bit on both sides of whether they want to bring him back, lukewarm on it. But what are your thoughts from a fantasy perspective in bringing someone like Ime Udoka over Steven Silas, which I think is pretty much a home run at this point?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Silas, that was pretty much an impossible situation. You know, you go in there thinking that you're going to be coaching James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and then they both request trades within, what, a month? So, yeah, that was an impossible situation. I'm shocked he lasted as long as he did. Udoka, in terms of the guards, I think he's going to bring a stronger sense of accountability because we're past the point where those guys can just explain away turnovers and bad shots as we're young. You know, Jalen Green's got 2 years under his belt, Kevin Porter Jr. even more. It's time for those guys to step up in terms of decision-making. I think having Udoka there, it could be really beneficial to them as long as they accept, you know, the teaching that's going to be going on there. Şengün, I'm a little worried about, but not too much. I don't think I think he's been too good for them to really just completely toss away. The defensive issues, he will have to get better there, but I think his fantasy value is pretty secure going into next season, personally.
Yeah, I do too. I think that when you have someone like Udoka, for what he did in such a short amount of time with the Boston Celtics, you got to be excited as a Houston fan. From a fantasy perspective, I'm thinking that the Houston Rockets are going to do something by draft time. Whether it's we get a better idea of whether James Harden's serious or about actually going there enough that they're going to sign him. That's going to cause some movement. Obviously, you're not going to have Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green, and James Harden all on your roster, and potentially the number four pick too, which could land another guard, potentially see how things shake out. But I think there's going to be some roster turnover here in order to make the team that Udoka would find the most successful. So wait and see mode from a fantasy perspective outside of Alperen Şengün and Jabari Smith Jr. for me. I think one of Jalen Green or Kevin Porter Jr. is going to be on the outs, which depending on their landing spot could be pretty interesting. The other two vacant coaching spots that have yet to be filled are Phoenix and Toronto. We already kind of mentioned a little bit about Doc Rivers being rumored to Phoenix. I don't know why. Well, I mean, I guess he has experience with Chris Paul. He's good. He's a seemingly good with egos, but I just don't see that as a realistic path to a championship given what he does with 3-1 and 3-2 leads in series. So let's talk about Toronto. What are you hearing about Toronto and what they might be able to do, at least from a coaching hire perspective?
Toronto's been kind of out of the box with some of their early discussions. JJ Redick's name was mentioned in terms of a preliminary conversation. I forget. There's Sergio Scariolo. I apologize if I'm getting his name wrong, but he's coaches in the EuroLeague. He's another coach that they've interviewed, apparently. If any team that's of the two that's remaining with a head coaching vacancy were to go outside of the box, I think it would be Toronto. They're in a bit of a interesting situation here. As we mentioned earlier, Fred VanVleet's going to be a free agent. You still have Pascal Siakam, but that rotation clearly needs work based upon what we saw from the last two seasons. Whether you think Nick Nurse trusted the bench guys enough or not, you know, there's clearly a need to rework that roster to a certain extent. I don't think you go full on rebuild, but they need to make some changes there. So it'll be interesting to see how Masai Ujiri handles it, but I don't think there are many active league executives that you would trust more in terms of putting together a formidable roster than him, based upon what he did in Denver and what he's done in Toronto.
Yeah, I'd agree. And they did. They certainly also have assets to play with. Gary Trent Jr. could be on the outs, but you know, you still got OG Anunoby there. You Scottie traded Barnes, for Jakob Poeltl. Scotty Barnes is a great person that you can build around. Always been rumored to potentially be involved in, you know, big veteran asset moves. So yeah, he's got some definitely some players to play with here. There's some assets to play with. So curious to see. We will definitely update you when we learn of those coaching vacancies when they're filled. But we are still in baseball season, and unsurprisingly, best ball's coming up. Scott Fishbowl, literally football talk already in June, and every season is draft season. So make sure you get your Roto World Draft Guide bundle today and dominate your football, baseball, and basketball drafts packed with profiles, rankings, projections. Order today and get all three Roto World draft guides for the price of two. Plus, use promo code BERRY, that is B-E-R-R-Y, and save an extra 20% at checkout. Shouts to my man, Lawrence Jackson. Always appreciate his fantasy analysis in the offseason for football. Make sure you check out his shows as well as all the work, all the fine work that everyone does there at RotoWorld. All right, Raf, the draft lottery is now complete, and the Spurs are on the clock. Consensus pick, Wemby, Victor Wembanyama, the 7'5 Frenchman that is probably the most hyped player since LeBron James. Is there any chance the Spurs do not take him number one? Probably not. So what does that mean for everything else? I don't think we really need to talk about what Victor – well, actually, now that his landing spot is pretty much determined, do you think that that's impacted his draft positioning at all? Where do you see him going?
I think he's someone that you could see come off of fantasy boards as soon as the third round. Because everything he brings to the table, he can shoot – from three-point range, he can score in the mid-range. He's not the strongest, not most physically strong player, but that's okay. You know, this isn't like the 90s era NBA where you had back-to-the-basket centers just, you know, looking to beat the hell out of each other.
He's not bodied by Antonio Davis and
exactly.
Charles
Oakley. Yeah. That's not his game. You know, he's not going to be asked to do that. I think if anything, you look at the Spurs from a fantasy standpoint, I think Zach Collins is going to be the one who's impacted the most. Yeah. Wembanyama can play either the four or the five, but I think Collins is the one who takes the hit in terms of a place in the starting lineup. Greg Popovich did say at the end of the regular season that, you know, it was fair to assume that Collins would be the starting center going into camp, but that was April 9th, and on May 16th, they won the draft lottery, so... With all due respect to Zach, he'll still be in the rotation, but I have a hard time believing he would start over Wembanyama. Maybe Jeremy Sochan. I think that could help him, if anything. You know, having that type of player next to you defensively maybe gets him a bit more aggressive in terms of steals and even some blocks. So I think he's someone else to keep an eye on there in terms of fantasy impact of Wembanyama's arrival.
Yeah, I was thinking, what would their projected starting lineup be? So yeah. Trey Jones, Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Sochan, and then I would probably say Wemby, yeah. And then bring Zach Collins off the bench. Mm-hmm. And then you could probably swap out, you know, maybe you run Wemby at the four, Collins at the five. You know, yeah. I think that Pop is probably very excited, probably the most excited he's been since drafting Tim Duncan right now, enough mm-hmm. that he's like, you know what, this tank yeah. job was worth it, man. I think the ideal landing spot for him to grow and develop with so much international prominence that's come out of that San Antonio franchise. I think this is probably the best situation that could have happened. Not only that, he doesn't have a lot of fantasy competition in terms of mm-hmm. usage rate, just stars on the team. Like Wemby, insert him into this lineup and yeah. he is the man. So I think that's probably the best thing you could have asked for from a fantasy perspective. I think people are probably going to be overly aggressive on Wemby, probably get some second round values in there. But I think third round is certainly a place where I would probably feel comfortable just given the block upside, scoring potential. I think we're going to actually see the rebounds a little bit understated. I'm curious, like rookie of the year is actually going to be very competitive this year. Chet Holmgren, I think they actually have kind of similar games in terms of like what they can do in terms of shooting defensively. So I'm curious to see how that actually kind of shakes out between them and the battle for rookie of the year. Because both are in really good situations that I think would command a lot of respect. In their respective situations. Number two, this one's where it's going to get a little bit interesting. Charlotte Hornets. I'm thinking they're going to go Brandon Miller here, but what do you think is the best fantasy fit? Whether they go Scoot, Brandon, Amen Thompson, like what are you thinking here?
I actually think it's Scoot Henderson. I know they've seen people say that he can't play next to LaMelo Ball because they both need the basketball in their hands. I don't necessarily agree with that. LaMelo's at 6'7". He has the size to play off the ball. I think, if anything, you're concerned defensively there. But We've seen Charlotte do it in the past with LaMelo and Terry Rozier. So I think he can play there. If you're big on upside, Scoot Henderson's 19, Brandon Miller's 21. Then also, you have to weigh the off-court issues here. I know that Brandon Miller wasn't charged or found responsible in the murder that happened on the off the Alabama campus in January, but there's something to be said about being in those situations to begin with, the way you could potentially be in a bad spot. I know he's young, you have things to learn and whatnot, but you're talking about a team that had to deal with the Miles Bridges situation, you know, last summer. So I know it was reported last week that they were sending lawyers down to Tuscaloosa to look into that a bit more. Obviously, any team with a high pick is going to do their due diligence, but I know a lot of people like Brandon Miller just because of the positional fit. I think PJ Washington's a free agent, if I'm not mistaken. Let me double check on that. But either way, I think Scoot Henderson, even with the perimeter shooting struggles, a lot of his three-point attempts came on the ball last season with G League Ignite. Get him off the ball a bit more, I think that percentage will increase some. So, yeah, I like Scoot there. I wouldn't be too shocked if it was Brandon Miller, just like I said, the positional fit. But I don't know, man. I don't know. You're asking a franchise to take an eight-figure, close to nine-figure chance on someone. All those answers better be right with regard to on the court and off the court.
Yeah, optically, I feel like it probably would be in their best interest to not draft Brandon Miller based off of the allegations that have been running through that system, that franchise for the last couple of years between Book Nine and Miles Bridges. However, if you're looking at their roster, they need a small forward. Yeah. Like more than anything, like they don't need a guard. I think Terry Rozier is signed through at least 24, 25. I think he's got a partially guaranteed contract for 2026. They could trade Terry Rozier though. Like that's not going to be hard to do. Everyone needs a guard like him that can play defense and shoot threes. But yeah, I think Scoot is more talented, and I don't want to deal with the headache of Brandon Miller, but I just can't help but notice that, you know, PJ Washington is a restricted free agent. Gordon Hayward is definitely nearing the end of his contract. Kelly Oubre he might be an unrestricted free agent now. So they have a need for a wing, and the guy's 6'9". He can play multiple positions. You know, character aside, I think it's a good fit fantasy-wise if he goes to Charlotte more than Scoot, which right now I think kind of looks like a crowded backcourt. That being said, I think Scoot has more talent than Book Knight or any other backup guard that's on the Charlotte Hornets. So I think he would make his way into playing significant, you know, 25 plus minutes pretty early on. But that field goal percentage is definitely going to need to improve. He's super athletic, and I'm already imagining the highlight reel plays that they can make with LaMelo Ball. But like, I would definitely like to see a more structured, well-rounded game from him. Right now, he just kind of looks like a inefficient chucker that has all the talent in the world. Kind of like Russell Westbrook, but like not more like probably like Derrick Rose, I would say, in terms of athleticism and what he could bring. But yeah, like with that usage, like I would like for him to be a combo guard. So, you know, you'd want to see at least five assists. I don't know that he's going to be able to get that right out the gates with LaMelo Ball handling the rock so much. But either way, you know, I think the Charlotte Hornets are going to be in a good situation. They're going to get a very talented upside player that's young in Scoot Henderson or Brandon Miller. Third pick in the draft, though, Portland Trail Blazers. I think that's also another potential landing spot for Brandon Miller. But I think it's more than likely they're going to probably trade the pick, because I don't think that there's anyone in this draft that's going to help Damian Lillard win a championship right now. So what do you think the Trailblazers are going to do? Do they blow it up? Do they trade Dame? Do they just wind up drafting for need and then just, you know, take it from there?
I think they're going to try to move the pick. And we've seen him have injury issues in recent years. Obviously last year they just pulled the plug on the thing, but he's had some injury issues in the past. They can't afford to wait much longer. And the tough thing for them is that the draft pick is one of the few assets that they actually have right now. Jeremy Grant's going to be an unrestricted free agent. Cam Reddish and Matisse Thybulle are both restricted free agents. So, yeah, I think they're going to move this thing. I don't think you can commit to Damian Lillard and expect him to continue on like a lengthy rebuild given his age.
Agreed. Yeah, I think this pick's going to be traded. I actually think that Amen Thompson would be a great pick right here, because if they're going to trade Dame, I don't know.
Wait, you're going to trade Dame?
I mean, at this point, they're probably going to – I mean, I don't know where they're going to be able to build beyond Dame, right? Like, unless they can acquire – all right, so if you trade – who can you trade the number three pick for that's worthy of joining Dame? I feel like Dame's going to be out. Jaylen Brown? I don't know if he's worth it.
They won't be able to get a pick
for that, you know?
I think they probably have to work out some sort of sign and trade with Jeremy Grant in addition to the pick, if anything, to get like someone who could properly help them, you know, not only get into the playoffs, but make a run. So I don't know. Dame's contract, I think it might be difficult, talent aside, to find a willing partner there just because of how much he's due to get paid in a few years' time.
Yeah, I don't know who they're going to be able to figure it out. I don't know. I could see a scenario where, like, I don't know, if the Sixers want to get crazy, they could trade Joel Embiid type of thing and get a number three pick. But, like, I don't know. It's going to be hard to – I feel like to get the level of talent that Dame's expecting to actually make a reasonable, considerable run in the playoffs, like, they got so much more work to do. Yusuf Nurkic sucks. They just have no depth. Like, I don't know. They have a bunch of young depth that they could probably trade, but – I know that's going to be do a lot of work for the GM there. So we'll see what they do. But, yeah, I do think they're going to end up trading the pick. And then four is the Houston Rockets, which we already kind of talked about. What are you expecting there? Do you think that could be another landing spot, or do you think that they might actually potentially trade that pick too?
I think that's a possible trade spot, you know, depending on what they hear about James Harden and how much that could potentially cost to bring him back if they really want to. I'm not giving him a max contract if I'm Houston, personally. I know great run there while he was there, but this current James Harden isn't the same player. Like, I don't care what they say about motivation or whatnot, but you can't give max money to him at this point in his career, I don't think. That fourth pick would be interesting. You mentioned Amen Thompson for one. Cam Whitmore out of Villanova. He's another player who could be in play for that number four spot. So, I think if anything, they need to figure out what they're going to do with that backcourt, what Ime Udoka wants to do in terms of play style, and whether or not those guys they currently have are capable of playing to that standard.
Yeah, I really have no idea what Houston's going to do. I feel like they're going to trade this pick, because if you want a veteran, that's what you're going to have to use as an asset, or trade something to dangle there. I just don't know what they're going to do. I would not pay Harden the max, but he's probably going to get paid something. I mean, he's still a 20-10 guy when it's all said and done. Depending on whether he can reduce his role, I think he pretty much said that, like, I want to be the number two, and I'm okay with that, just as long as that's what I'm signing up for. And Embiid didn't step up when it mattered most. But I think Harden did. I mean, Harden won them a couple games against the Boston Celtics, so I can't completely count him out, but he definitely does not look like the James Harden of old. And I think that's also because the game has kind of changed his flopping ways and the way that he draws fouls and was able to live at the line. He just doesn't do that as much anymore and definitely lost a step. So, yeah, I wouldn't pay him, but we'll see what the Houston Rockets decide to do. Any other thoughts? So the Orlando Magic also have the 6th and 11th pick. They have a really fun roster that I'm really excited for coming into the fantasy season. Markel Fultz is one of the players that I've been steadily moving up my draft boards after what he did last season. I think he's finally come into his own and looks comfortable out there. You know, almost shot 50% from the field, gives you 1.5 steals, you know, 5 and 5 potentially for rebounds and assists with like 15 points per game. Very high on Fultz, but like they also have a ton of talent there. You still got Banchero, you still got Franz Wagner. You still got Wendell Carter Jr. They don't necessarily need this 6th and 11th pick. So do you think that this is an opportunity for them to get better under Jamal Mosley and potentially you know, get a veteran player that could actually help this team get over that hump of getting out of the playoffs and actually into a playoff contending team.
Yeah, I don't know if they need to hold on to both lottery picks, because I think at 11, you've got a good chance of getting a shooter there, whether it's someone like a Grady Dick out of Kansas, for example, a guy who can be a good catch and shoot option for your team, because that's pretty much what they're missing at this point. You know, Gary Harris is capable, but he can't stay healthy. So, you know, I think they traded Terrence Ross to Phoenix, so he won't be in the equation. So, I think if anything, Orlando, you're looking to improve the perimeter shooting to play off of guys like Fultz and Banchero and Wagner, because once you get that, I think they're a team that could really make a jump in the East if they address that concern in the offseason.
Yeah, I'm excited for, as I said, the Orlando Magic, and their rebuild is going very well. They have a lot of young talent that seems to be working together. They're on the cusp of the play-in tournament already, so I wouldn't be surprised if they made that jump. All right, so
Got a question.
Oh.
We have got a question in the comment section. Months Behind asks, how can the Bulls be saved with no draft picks and Alonzo Ball issue? I'll let you handle this first.
How can they be saved? They might be screwed. Yeah, so for those that aren't that haven't heard, I mean, there's been rumors circulating that Lonzo Ball's injury could be career-ending. No official word has been given out on that, but just some things that have been circling around. They also traded a lot for Nikola Vucevic, and so he's due to get paid. At this point, I feel like you got to run it back just because that's what the situation kind of has given yourself. Like, that's the card you've been dealt. You could trade Zach LaVine, but I wouldn't do it. But I think that's probably your best trade asset that you have, based on contract and youth and so forth. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough road for the Bulls. I think they just got to run it back, and, you know, they're going to be a middling playoff team for probably the next several years until they can get pretty much out of this contract situation with a couple of their main stars.
Yeah. DeMar DeRozan's heading into a contract year, so maybe that's something, that's a potential trade possibility as the season progresses. But I think he's been too good to move. LaVine's got 3 years under contract, guaranteed. We've heard his name come up in some trade rumors. There's also reports that the Bulls and Vucevic are working on a new deal to get that finalized before June 30th. So it seems like for now they're looking, I guess you'd say, run it back right now, but it's going to be tough. You got Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu both being restricted free agents this summer. Regardless of what happens with them, they obviously have to address the point guard situation, Lonzo Ball being out. Alex Caruso plays well, but I don't think he's a starting point guard in a team that has, like, playoff ambitions. So,
right.
Yeah, that's going to be huge for them, but as you mentioned, and as a commenter mentioned, they don't have much room to work with here.
No, they don't. And I was trying to look up Patrick Williams' salary. So he's going to be a restricted free agent going next off summer, season. Yeah. So I think that's somebody that I think everyone's been kind of waiting. And I don't know, I don't know if we can wait anymore, but he certainly needs to take a jump. For that team to be better. You know, they spent that draft capital on him, and he hasn't really proven to be much of anything. I just don't see – they don't have a great amount of depth, and, you know, as they're kind of, you know, handicapped by these contracts, like, I think they're just going to be a middle-of-the-road team. So it's good that we got the Bulls fans in here, man. I'm hoping for you, but, like, I definitely would – you know, if we're talking about fantasy, I think it's pretty safe that DeMar DeRozan would be a top 40 player next year. He's the most, and Vucevic also showed out.
I think Vucevic should be up there too. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a top 30 as well. I'd say probably LaVine, probably top 50, but yeah, I think those two dudes from a fantasy perspective are still solid. And if they don't do anything to their roster, even better for them. Any other questions? Or are we good?
We're good.
All right. So hope you guys enjoy the NBA finals. We'll return in a couple of weeks where we'll break down, the upcoming draft in more detail, as well as discuss some of the playoff risers. We touched on Jamal Murray, a little bit on Austin Reeves, but there's been a couple other guys that have also showed out that I think will actually help their fantasy value going into next season. So until then, we'll talk to you next time. Peace.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.